Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Amber May Show. So glad you're joining me today because I have a independent filmmaker slash author slash a former reporter, Gayla Pruitt. She is joining me today. And the stuff that we're talking about on this episode is amazing. And what she has written is coming to pass right now. And when she was writing it, she didn't necessarily think about it as being like necessarily going to happen. But like she's done research on her projects, on her films, on her books, wrote about it, but didn't exactly know like everything that's happening now was written in her book. So it is a fascinating show. Again, independent filmmaker and author. So Gayla Pruitt is on today's episode. So please like, share, and subscribe. If you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. And the easiest way to do that is go to theambermayshow.com, hit the donate button, and donate whatever you feel you can donate. $5, $10, $100, whatever you think you can donate, that would be so helpful. Or for $5 a month, you could be an angel investor at theambermayshow.locals.com. That's theambermayshow.locals.com. I always add more content. Join me on Telegram at The Amber May Show. I'm on True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, and I'm on Clout Hub, so find me on those locations. But without any further ado, I'd love to introduce you to Gayla Pruitt. Welcome back. Like I said, I have the one and only Gayla Pruitt joining us today. I'm really excited to have her on. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you know, your background's interesting because I went to journalism too, school too, like you. I got into radio right after journalism school. So that's what I did. I worked at an AM talk show, but your background's pretty interesting. So I kind of want to get into like what made you go into that line of work of journalism? How'd you do that? And then how did you get into filmmaking, being an author? Like, I think your progression of life is very fascinating. So let's get into like all that stuff. And then we're going to get into some of the things you're working on now, like this book and a movie, the movies that you're doing with that and other movies.
Okay. I've always wanted to, be a storyteller and inform people. I found a cassette tape. I'm dating myself a little bit from when I was like 10 years old, and I was interviewing my great grandmother about the olden days. And so I was being the little reporter then. And so I would ask her questions about, you know, all the things that they did, because she grew up in a horse and buggy time. So, so I just looked at journalism at that time when I got out of college as a calling, because I believe in this country and any country that wants freedom, you need accurate, unbiased information, and then people can make up their own minds. And unfortunately, I feel journalism has taken a horrible turn, at least the mainstream journalism. But that's what I was always wanting to do, was just to help people. I looked at it as a calling to help them make informed decisions.
You and I have that in common too. So I did the same thing. I was even younger than 10. I was 3 or 4 with my cassette player that had the microphone attached to it, and I'd make up my own radio shows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I always knew that I wanted to be a broadcaster. And so that's so funny. And I too feel like it was a calling that was placed upon my life to be a broadcaster of some form or fashion. And when I went into journalism school, I wanted to hold the government accountable to the people. I wanted to be the fourth branch of government. And and when we were in journalism school, I remember my professor talking about the different types of journalism all over the world. And you had the controlled, basically, most of it was controlled by the state. And here I was thinking in my young 20s, I'm like, thank God we have a free press, right? And I was like, because we were talking about like the different captured media in the different countries and how terrible that is, because the people don't know that they're not informed. Right. They really don't know. So that just made me really sad. And I'm thinking, wow, this is so awesome, you know, because I went to the Walter Cronkite School of Broadcast.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yes. Wow.
So I'm like, good thing that we have America and that just doesn't happen here. And then I'm like, whoa. Okay. Well, I guess we got captured. So there goes that. But you know what? Thank God for internet and these independent podcasters that can bring information that the top guys at the very, very top of the media empire doesn't want us to know about. So that's, I'm just grateful for this opportunity.
Yes. And what is sad in America, it has become normalized for journalists on the mainstream media to even do editorializing all through there, and nobody seems to pay attention. I was an adjunct instructor for a while, and my students would just say things, and I'm like, you have to give attribution. Who says? You cannot have an opinion. Well, when they watch the news, it's like, well, they give their opinions all the time with nothing to back it up with. So it's just, yeah, it's sad because I think in America, maybe in some ways it's almost worse because we think we're still free, and we are much more. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love our country, and there's really no other place in the world like it. And correct. If we fail, there's no place to go. So, but I do think we're also misled in thinking we're still the America that we were 30, 40, you know, years ago, at least with the freedom of information. And it's kind of ironic. Like you said, we have the internet and everything. And thank goodness we do have that. That has been a great, great equalizer. But yeah, I think we still think, some of us still think, oh, well, whatever they say on there is true. And so, yeah, it's sad. But
so how long were you in a journalist before you left to be an independent filmmaker?
Well, actually, I've had a long journey in between. So I worked in television news. I was a reporter, weekend anchor. I did that for about 6 years. And where I worked, you were kind of, it's called a one-man band. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. And back then, you know, the equipment was about 100 pounds. So, and I was...
Yeah, back then there was actual tape, the beta tapes. Did you guys have the beta tapes?
Yeah, the three-quarter inch. Yeah.
I'm
really old.
Yeah.
So yeah, we had the three quarters. We had this big, huge deck that was this much,
huge,
and a big camera, and then a light belt that I said always looked like a diver weight belt. And so to run your lights off of if you didn't have electricity. And so I kind of wanted to start a family, and I shot all my own stuff, and I'm like, I don't think I can do this. And so I left about after 6 years. And then I worked at an education place and did promotional videos for them. And then our family grew and we moved, and I taught journalism at the local university for a while. And then I ended up homeschooling, which I hadn't planned on doing. So I just kind of been doing projects on my own. But I felt like, you know, writing a film or a novel, something I could do from home. I didn't have to travel a lot. And I feel like what better way to influence culture? I mean, it's not journalism, but if you have truths in those stories, people love to go watch a film and be entertained. And it really also brings in your emotions. And so that's kind of why I turned to that, writing more of the films and the novels and things. Actually, I'm more of a film screenwriter than a novelist, because I take my screenplays and put them into a novel. So I wouldn't call myself a real novelist.
So. Brilliant. I mean, I haven't been able to read this book yet, but I cannot wait. You know, right now it's just the extra busy time of year.
Right.
I cannot wait, because the premise of this book that you sent me, Glimmer, is very intriguing to me, like super intriguing. And I'm like, well, is this daughter real or not real? Like, I want to know now. Like, very, very intriguing. So I cannot wait to dive into this book. So I want to thank you for this book. And real quick, if anyone wants to buy any of your books, is this where they find it, on your website, GaylaPruitt.com?
Yes, GaylaPruitt.com. Okay. And I have links at the top. And so there's a different ones, but like the film and novel projects, if they click on that, they can click on the cover of the book and it'll take them to Amazon. It's on Amazon.
So the website link for my audio listeners only will be in the description. So check out the description, because all the links will be there. But GaylaPruitt.com is the website that you need to check us out. So this is a fascinating premise. So I want you to talk a little bit about this book and how you got started writing this and movie. Like, why did you even think about doing this? I mean, this is a very interesting, I haven't heard anyone write something similar to this. Like, it's a very interesting concept when you're talking about, you know, the pro-life versus the right to life, or the right to choose. This is a very different take on the whole subject, because now she's like wondering, did she really have a kid? Because people are calling her crazy. Very interesting. Like, I think this is really a really cool concept. So, like, walk me through how this came to be.
Well, you know, I've always wanted to do more for the pro-life movement for our babies. And I feel like God gave me this story because you've heard the studies where women, if they've had an ultrasound and they actually see the baby or hear the heartbeat, then a lot of times they don't make the same decision that they would have mm-hmm. made. And so I'm like, well, what if you actually had your child? You got to have a preview of your child living with you. Would you then decide, oh, this baby is not, I'm not going to keep this baby after I've lived with this child for 4 years, the child that I have in here, that's who they would be. So in the story, you don't know what's going on. The audience doesn't, I want to take the audience on a journey. So we've all heard stories of when somebody's lost their child, a 2-3 year old child, mm-hmm. and the whole neighborhood comes out and searches for that child. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what we do. Well, that's the same child that's in the mommy's tummy. So why is it so important that we go search for these children, but it's okay as a society, we think, to eliminate that child? We would never do that. I mean, most people would never do that unless you're a monster or something. So I wanted to take the audience on a journey. I don't even mention the word abortion or anything in the book. So it's just very much a thriller, but there is a revelation at the end.
It sounds like a thriller. It really does, because I don't know if this woman is sane or not sane. Right. I can't wait to find out. Like, I'm chomping at the bit to read this book. And I don't usually feel that way about books because I like to read, but I don't love to read. You know what I mean? Like, it's not one of my things that some women, you know, that could spend hours in a good book, right? I'm like, maybe on a good day, you know?
Well,
I can't wait to read this one.
Well, I'm glad. I'm anxious to hear what you think about it. And I write probably more like a broadcast journalist, so everything's very condensed. And also being a screenwriter, it's condensed. And so my novels aren't like a lot of descriptions or anything like that. I mean, there's action and you do get description, but it's very, as you can see, it's not real thick.
No, it's not. So, and that's actually really good for me.
Well, good.
You know, my life is so busy. I work for a financial planner. I do my show. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I'm a precinct committeeman. Right. Like, I am scattered in a lot of different directions. And as a matter of fact, between you and me and the audience, I haven't done my precinct committeeman stuff for a while. So I need to, like, I have my assignment that I need to work on, right?
Right.
But we all have our spaces. And so when I saw this book, it wasn't overwhelmingly like, this is something I can manage. If I have a really long book, like a really thick novel, I don't think I can manage this. So I like the fact that it wasn't super long. I'm like, okay, I could probably read this in a couple hours, maybe a couple days, depending on how much time I get. And I'm excited because that it's not intimidating at all. And I want to know, is she crazy? Like,
right.
Did she dream of this kid? Like, I it sounds like a thriller to me, and I'm excited. So how do people find your film? So they're going to read the book, and then they're going to watch the film, but how do they find your films? Where do people find your films?
We are still in the fundraising stage of the film. And so I have partnered with Christian Ministry Alliance, which allows donations to be tax deductible. And we do have a fundraiser, and they can locate that also on my page. And we do have a proof of concept trailer so people can see the quality of what the film would look like. And that's also on my page too. And we've gotten support. Dr. Avita King has agreed to do a cameo role in the film once we get the funding. And she's been very supportive of the film as well. So, and that was a God thing too, because she doesn't know me. And I just called her one day, or I called her office, and she called me back, and she agreed to allow me to use her name, and she's to promote the project. So that God opened that door. And so I'm just praying.
For people who don't know who she is, can you tell us who Avita King is?
Yes. Well, she's a very Warrior for Life. And she's also the niece of Martin Luther King Jr. So, and she's got her own show on Fox and Friends. I think it's called Dr. Alveda King's House. And she tells her story. She did, I believe, have two abortions. And that's before she realized, you know, what exactly she was doing. And, you know, then once she did, she flipped totally the other way. And she also was almost aborted when she was a baby. Mm. And so I think her grandfather said, no, those aren't cells. That's a baby. And I believe he also talked about, I saw a dream, and she's my granddaughter, and she's got red hair. And she does.
so sweet.
Yes. And so, yeah, she's very much out there fighting for the babies.
Okay, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
I'm excited to announce that we're having our biggest Christmas sale ever. You get our brand new 6-piece My Towels for only $29.98, or rejuvenate your bed with a MyPillow mattress topper as low as $99.99. Or how about MyPillow bed sheets for as low as $24.98? There's something for everyone. Duvets, quilts, down comforters, body pillows, bolster pillows, and so much more. Well, I know MyPillow products make for the perfect Christmas gifts, so I'm going to extend my money-back guarantee until March 1st, 2024. So go to MyPillow.com now or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get huge discounts on all MyPillow products. For example, you get our 6-piece towels for only $29.98, or get your very own MyPillow bed sheets for as low as $24.98. It's our biggest Christmas sale ever. Get all your shopping done now while quantities last.
Hey guys, this is Pastor Greg Locke, and you are listening to The Amber May Show.
Hey friends, are you feeling constantly fatigued? Dealing with constant chronic fatigue where it's hard to get out of bed, it's hard to go to work, it's hard to play with the kids, it's just hard to do life? That's no life at all. And maybe you're overweight. Is it hard for you to lose weight? If these are problems that you're dealing with, perhaps you have a hormone imbalance. I would really highly recommend that you go see Dr. Meehan at meehanmd.com, because he is an expert in balancing hormones and getting our body working at optimal health. So if you're looking for a doctor you can trust, you just feel off, you don't feel the way you want to feel, like you did a couple years ago, 5 years ago. Maybe you've been dealing with this for many years. Stop dealing with it. Start living life. So go check out meehanmd.com. When you're there, let him know Amber May sent you, because he can help you get the health that you want, restore your body's hormonal balances back to the way God created it, and make you feel better. And while you're there, check out his supplemental store. He has amazing supplements to help support all kinds of functions in the body. Whether you're trying to support your immune health, your gut health, maybe you have trouble sleeping, go check him out at meehanmd.com. When you're there, use promo code Amber at checkout. You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress. You're right. It is not a cell. And I'll tell you, I'm a woman who have had 4 miscarriages, and my third miscarriage just sent me over the edge because it was an ectopic pregnancy. Oh, and yes. I finally had a baby and it was growing in the wrong yes. spot. And mm-hmm. so my life was on the line, and the baby wasn't viable. But I asked the doctor to take a picture of my baby, and it's mm-hmm. between like 7 and 8 weeks.
Oh yeah,
it looked like a baby. It yeah. had a head and eyes yeah. and little nubby arms. Yeah. I mean, it looked just like a baby. Why? Because it was a baby.
It's a baby. Yeah,
it was a baby. And if women just knew that's what the baby was like. It's easy to abort something that you think is just a clump of cells.
Yeah. And they've sanitized it and they don't see it. Actually, it's interesting you brought that up. I was just looking on Christian Newswire today, and they have a story. I think it's the Justice Association. It's filed some kind of lawsuit, and it's on behalf of the chemical pill, because now these women are seeing the baby because it's happening at home, and they're seeing, I mean, I don't want to be real graphic, but the baby is being deposited in their toilet, and then they're upset and they're like, well, I didn't know that was a baby and I want to bury my baby. I can't bury my baby now. And
I agree with, I know what that feeling's like, because when you're having a miscarriage, suddenly like your a lot of blood's coming out. Right.
Yeah.
And you don't really realize it at first. Yeah. And you have that guilt feeling like, I just flushed my baby down the toilet, and the guilt is unreal. I can't even tell you how guilty you feel, because that's not a proper way to dispose of a baby. I mean, I never saw the baby, but you know what's going on. Like, if you knew you were pregnant, and if you don't know you're pregnant, it could just look like a really bad period. But if you know you're pregnant, and oh man, that guilt is horrible. So I get it with all those women feeling that way. And I guess, praise God, there's a lawsuit out, because that is a terrible feeling to go through.
Yeah. Terrible. Well, and they said, you know, we're being lied to, you know, for first of all, it's harming them. A lot of them are having a lot more problems than that they told them, and they weren't aware. And I had two miscarriages also later in life. And you already have plans for that baby.
Mm-hmm.
You're already like, what's it going to look like?
Yes.
I mean, and I wasn't very far along in either one, but they were doctor confirmed pregnancies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you have these dreams for this child. And so now obviously these women that are making that decision don't feel that way. But then when they realize what they've done, some of them, I'm not saying all of them, but
A good majority of the women that after they do it, they feel so guilty, and the guilt lasts forever, or at least a long time. But at least we believe in a God that forgives, right?
Yes.
And if you can just realize that you're forgiven, if you've made that choice and you regret it, it's you're forgiven of that, and you just have to ask for it, and God will forgive you. And the blessed assurance, the best part about the whole thing, whether you've had a miscarriage or you've had an abortion, the best thing about that is knowing that your baby's soul is now with God, and there is no pain that child's ever going to experience.
Yeah.
It's only going to know love from this point forward for the rest of their life. And hopefully that brings any grieving mother some comfort, because that's the only thing I could cleave to when I lost all four of my babies. That was the only thing.
David
said, I can't go to my child, but someday, or my child can't come to me, but someday I can go to my child. Even King David was grieving the loss of losing his child.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bible's so amazing, because they talk about infertility in the Bible. They talk about the loss of pregnancies in Bible. They talk about rape in Bible. I mean, they talk about everything in the Bible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is scripture, no matter what you're going through, that can talk to exactly that pain that you are dealing with. And at the end of the day, it's only Jesus Christ that can relieve you from that pain.
Yeah.
But they don't tell the women in that. All they tell you is it's your body, your choice, and it's a clump of cells, and they don't tell them about the physical dangers that can happen with abortions.
Exactly.
I was at a precinct committeeman meeting a month ago, and this lady came up, and she had an abortion at 16. She was an athlete, and she was kind of far along, but she didn't realize what she was doing.
Yeah.
She was 16.
Maybe,
and the doctor did something to make her infertile the rest of her life. Like, she could never carry a baby again. Never. It damaged her body so bad she could never carry a baby. So her one and only chance, you know, imagine that pain. You know what I mean? Like, imagine that pain. The Lord has used that.
Right.
I love how God says, sorrow may last for the night, and joy comes in the morning, and he turns everything around for good. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he took that sorrow from that lady, and he's using it to speak to other women so that they can avoid the pain that she went through. And there's some kind of healing mechanism involved in that when.
When you help others from your pain and your exactly. I mean, we've been gone through some things in the last year and a half, and I've been speaking out about that as well. And so that's kind of been my, you know, the same thing. I feel like God can make good even out of really horrible situations.
Yes, because you're a wife of a first responder. And then do you feel comfortable talking about that story with your late husband?
Sure. I mean, I have been talking about, I'm trying to get changes in our medical system. So to me, it's all life. It's all about life, because, you know, the preborn babies. And then I think it just follows. We've disrespected life in general. And so the very sick and the old, I think that's, we don't respect those lives either. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but I mean, I think it's a lot more pervasive than we realize.
And yeah.
I think the pandemic kind of put a spotlight on it, but I think it was going on beforehand, but I do think it accelerated things. And in my opinion, now a lot of the people that did speak up and stand up are no longer in our hospitals. So it's really crucial that we try to make change, because I think healthcare in America is not what it should be, especially, like I said, for the very sick. And so I think they write people off, and I've uncovered studies where they admit to hastening death without the patient's permission, which to me, the other situations are also debatable, the morality of that. But when the patient or the family is not wanting it, it's being forced upon them without mm-hmm. their knowledge or consent. I think that's something we really need to be talking about. Mm-hmm.
So what happened with your husband?
He was diagnosed. He was a first responder, retired fireman, and he was diagnosed with leukemia, acute leukemia, at the end of May 2022. And we went through 3 rounds of chemo, which we never planned on doing chemo, but that's where we ended up. And we do try to do a lot of natural health and stuff. But and his leukemia was in remission, but the chemo really wreaks havoc on your immune system. So he got an infection, and that's a whole nother story, but he ended up in a major hospital. That's where they thought he needed to go. And we didn't know at the time when they transferred him, he was home, but he wasn't feeling well. And so they transferred him there for a bone marrow transplant is what the original plan was, but he wasn't feeling well. Well, then they discovered after the transfer, he had an infection, and they mistreated the infection, denied complementary treatments that he had had, like vitamin C and another substance called albumin. And if anybody ever has sepsis, they need to research those. There's protocols for that stuff. But they denied, and they gave him the wrong antibiotics, as indicated from the transferring hospital. I don't know what happened there. And then I find out when I get his records, they were giving him massive amounts of fentanyl. And they wrote terminal and DNR in his chart after he was in there a week. I didn't know that either. He was 56 years old.
You were the second person that told me that they found there was someone wrote in the chart DNR. I was like, and that was not true at all. There was no DNR. That they made it up and put it in the chart.
Well, they had said because of some medical condition, they couldn't actually do chest compressions on him. So I'm like, okay, because it would hurt him. But there's other, I mean, they have machines to shock you, but once they write terminal and DNR on you, they're not trying to help you anymore.
No.
They decide it's time for you to go.
That's right.
And I found out all the drugs they were giving him, and I didn't know why he looked like he did. And later it was classic symptoms of drug overdose, and he was very sensitive to those things and didn't want those things. And then they did come in the day he died and wanted to do what they called comfort care. And they were going to give him, this is how the nurse put it, aggressive doses of morphine and Ativan on top of everything else they were giving him. He hadn't been awake for 2 or 3 days. So I just looked at them and said, no. And I told them, it's not up to you, it's not up to me, it's up to God. And obviously they knew what they were suggesting, because they didn't say, what do you mean? You know? So, yeah, I think I can't guarantee he would have gotten better. I was still fighting for him to. His infection was gone. His infection was gone. The day his infection's gone, when they write DNR and terminal on there and start upping all his. And his leukemia was in remission, as indicated by tests just 3 weeks earlier. So, but I think they wrote him off as a terminal cancer patient. They wanted him out the door. He wasn't going to get better. And they just upped. The drugs, and I think they killed him with the drugs. So, yeah,
that's very possible. I mean, my dad was a liver transplant patient at a very well-known hospital that is known for transplants, and it was during 2021.
Okay.
And I think the doctors are just so COVID stupid. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't COVID, it was almost like all their medical knowledge left their brain. Yeah. I don't know, because I was taking my dad every week to go get tested, just to see how his levels were doing. And he kept getting paler and paler and paler. And it wasn't because his liver was failing, the new one. It was very healthy. His body was accepting it. What it turns out was there was some type of fungal or bacterial infection in his heart valve. And they didn't treat it. And that ended up killing my dad. Not the liver transplant, but that. And I couldn't understand that, because every week I was taking him for blood work.
Yeah.
Surely his white blood cell count would have been through the roof. Like, right. So you would have thought, okay, they're going to put him on something.
Right.
He was complaining to his cardiologist about his heart.
I was told, and I didn't even, because we didn't go in the hospital or anything for COVID. We got through it and everything. But I was told later, when I'm telling people what they did to my husband, I mean, first of all, they forced his BiPAP thing on him.
And
that'll keep him off the vent. I mean, he had an infection. I don't know. And he wasn't having problems breathing. But anyway, I'm thinking, well, this isn't COVID, so surely they know what they're doing. And but they didn't feed him for 5 days before he died either. And I kept asking him, aren't you feeding him? Because they ended up putting a feeding tube. No, we can't do that because of the medicines. And I don't know how they think anybody's ever going to get better if you're not feeding them. And you're giving him all these drugs. And
that's what they did for COVID patients too. They stopped.
That's what I've been told. Oh, they used the COVID protocols on him. I mean, they didn't give him remdesivir or anything. But everything else, not feeding, you know, not telling me things. I didn't know half the stuff. Then a nurse came in the middle of the night, and because he ended up having sepsis and going into septic shock because they hadn't given him the right antibiotic, I noticed turning down, or it was at his IV pump, and I noticed his blood pressure just plummeted, because that's what happens with severe sepsis. And I said, what are you doing? And he told me, well, I'm turning down his blood pressure medicine. I said, why are you doing that? And he said, well, because they tell me we're just prolonging the inevitable. So this is the day after they tell me his infection is gone, and they just gave up on him. So I just, I mean, that's when I realized, oh my gosh, they are not trying to help my husband anymore. They didn't know him. They came in and out. You'd see a different doctor. I mean, it's not like they would not talk to his oncologist. He had a really good hometown oncologist. They would not talk with him. Every doctor that came in there, I said, I have his cell number. He wants to talk to you. I wrote it up on the board. No, never. So
it's hard to lose someone like that. It's really hard. So if you decide to go medical malpractice, that would be great. Like, I support that 100%. So I'm sorry that you lost the love of your life, and it's just so heartbreaking. I think most of us by now have experienced something similar to what you just described, and it's so horrific, horrific. But at least we have the promise of seeing them again. I know in the moment, like, it doesn't feel super great to hear that, but I don't know what it would be like not to have that hope and you lose your person forever. I don't know how one grieves that way.
Yes, I totally agree with you, because my husband wasn't a Christian when we got married, and he was a Christian, I think, around 2000. He became a Christian, and that brought home that even more to me, is like, I thank God every day that he knows him, he knew Jesus, and I know where he's at. And I don't know how people get through that. And you mentioned, yes, a lot of stories. I have sat in on, I don't really, our narrative doesn't exactly fit, but I've sat in on some meetings they have every Monday night. If anybody's going through a COVID thing that they feel like the hospital's failed them, it's called Former Feds, and they have monthly or weekly meetings for people, and they can sit in and share their stories, and they're trying to get some things done. So I think, if nothing else, people want some closure and they want some answers, and they want people to at least admit what they did. You know, it's like, nobody is taking responsibility for anything.
That's right.
And I think that's the hardest thing. And yeah, I didn't know my husband was going to die. I was fighting for him. We'd been through all that and his cancer was in remission and we had hope for a future. And mm-hmm. I didn't even get to really say bye to him. He was unconscious for the last, cause they drugged him so much. And so, you know,
it's and just, that's what's really hard too. Yeah. Is the closure, not say, mm-hmm. not being able to say goodbye to him. That's mm-hmm. tough, man.
Yeah.
That's really tough. So yeah, we definitely need reform. For sure, we need reform. Hey, I'm gonna get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm gonna take a quick break. In the early 1900s, like 1920s, 30s, you with $20, you used to be able to buy an entire men's suit. You could get the handkerchief, the tie, the vest, the jacket, the pants, the belt, everything. And you could also buy that with a piece of gold. Now, in today's standards, you can't buy much with $20. Maybe a tie, maybe that's it. You could not even come close to an entire men's suit with a $20 bill. However, if you still had a piece of gold, you could still buy an entire men's suit with that piece of gold. See, silver and gold have intrinsic value, and it's had intrinsic value since the beginning of time. It's always been a currency around since the existence of man, gold and silver. So why not protect your investments and protect your earning power by owning some gold and silver? And the easiest way to do that is contacting Jim Tewell at EPSWealthManagement.com. That's Edward Paul Sam, wealthmanagement.com, EPSWealthManagement.com. Give him a call and let him know you'd like some, to have some tangible assets in your portfolio. You'd like to have some gold and silver, and he can help you do that. So if you're ready to protect yourself and protect your investments, then go ahead and give Jim Tewell a call, whom you've seen on our program at EPSWealthManagement.com. Let him know Amber May sent you. You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress. But you have so many other projects and novels. Is that, okay, you have this vitamin C. I thought that was fascinating because there has been a deliberate attack on the food industry. And that was a really fascinating concept, like vitamin or seed police. I'm like, what's a seed police? And I'm like, oh, okay. So that was fascinating. Tell me about that. I think it's a movie, right? Or is it a book?
Well, it's as another screenplay that I put into a novel, and it's also available on my website. And I actually wrote that several years ago because our children had had some health issues, and we discovered a program called the Fine Gold Diet, which helps with hyperactivity and learning and things. And it's very basic. It was actually developed in the 60s by a pediatric allergist, and it removes like the dyes and some of the preservatives and things like that, which they're all made from petroleum, which I didn't know until we got into that. Yeah, so I was a spokesperson for them as a volunteer for many years because it really helped our family. And so that kind of started opening my eyes to things that, oh, just because you go to the store and buy it doesn't mean it's safe or good for your family. I used to think that, you know.
I used to think that too.
Yeah, because you're thinking, well, we've got the EPA, the FDA, and all these, you know. Well, and then you find out how that actually works. It's not so good sometimes.
No.
So that opened my eyes. And then I started learning more and more and more about genetically modified food. And so I kind of took that concept a little further, which that's not so far-fetched, but it's basically this farm family, the government's taken over all food production. You can't grow anything.
That's right.
Unless it's genetically modified, and owning seeds is illegal. You're not allowed to grow your own food. And so this farm family is literally growing their food underground and sharing with their neighbors. And so that's kind of how that takes off.
But that's not so far-fetched because when you get into the 15-minute smart cities, and even mm-hmm. right now, they don't want, there's going to be a big disparage if the globalists get what they want. If the mm-hmm. people of the New World Order get what they want, it's going to be the super rich and the ultra poor. And the mm-hmm. the World Economic Forum hasn't been quiet in trying to hide the fact that they want us to eat bugs.
That's the new thing now. Tyson's developing this bug protein.
That's what I was just going to say. Tyson has partnered with the World UN. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's the UN or who, one of those, okay, one of those globalist organizations to manufacture mm-hmm. bug-based meat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice in the grocery stores aisle now, you're going to see more and more of this Beyond.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is beyond because we're eating bugs. We are a first world nation. There is no reason why we cannot eat meat. I mean, they're destroying the cattle farmer industry on purpose because they don't want us to eat the meat. If you go to any communist country, there's a big disparage on how much those people can, how much meat they can eat. Yeah. They want them to eat everything else but. Like I was watching a video once about this man who escaped Cuba, and it was illegal for him to fish for lobster and to eat beef. And he comes to America, and eventually, you know, he gets some help and he makes some friends and they take him to this restaurant and he gets to order a hamburger.
Yeah.
He couldn't believe it. And it was so much food for him. He had to cut it in half and save it. He was actually tearing up at the restaurant. This is what the video said, because it was so much food and he wasn't allowed to eat it in his country. And he couldn't believe he's finally eating this food and he didn't want to waste it. And eventually became a veteran. Like he served in the military, naturalized, served in the military. This is where they're going. They want us to eat bugs while they eat cows. They're trying to tell us that carbon is horrible for the nation, for the world, but everything is based on carbon. Mm-hmm. If you go back to high school chemistry, there's nothing not made of carbon.
Well, it's life. Carbon is life.
Yes, exactly. Right. And so the attack on food is so real. And then a lot of us podcasters have been exploiting the fact that they have been putting manufacturing companies on fire across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been highlighting that because they would not do that on mainstream TV. You would never heard it. The only place you heard it is here through us podcasters, because we're finding all kinds of these news articles on really good conservative news sites, but they're not being picked up anywhere else.
Right.
So there's a deliberate attack on the food industry with setting fire on the food. Then they're genetically modifying our food. Mm-hmm. Then they're also putting the mRNA in
mRNA. Yeah, that's the new thing, I guess. So, well, and have you heard of this alpha gal thing? Have you heard of that?
No, tell me about that.
Oh, you might want to research that. I don't know a lot about it, but to me, what better way to make it where people can't eat meat? I guess it's something about a tick bite puts something into people where they are allergic to any mammal meat and it makes them physically ill. I have a relative that has that issue. And then I've heard more and more people and I'm like, well, yeah, what better way to get it where, I mean, I think Lyme's disease was a creation in a lab.
It could have been.
So, I mean, I don't have anything to back up what I'm saying,
right,
but it's just something it's interesting to me that now there's such an attack on meat, because I guess the cows are contributing to global warming, supposedly, is the narrative. And so now all of a sudden there's this new thing that you're hearing more and more people are actually allergic. I've never heard of anybody before being allergic to beef ever. I'm not saying that couldn't have happened, but it's getting to be a thing and it's called alpha gal. So like I said, I don't know a lot about it, but I'm like, well, that would you know, make things happen. Like
that doesn't surprise me because Bill Gates created a mosquito to transmit viruses with the mosquito. So that doesn't surprise me that maybe that could happen with a tick, that they could do that with a tick. That really nothing. I shouldn't be surprised anymore because all the nasty things these people are doing. And for people like you and I, the good people, normal everyday middle America has a really hard time wrapping their brains around that someone could do this because we don't think like them.
We don't think like that. We're busy taking care of our families and trying to make a living and helping people. We don't sit around and plot diabolical plans.
But there are people that do. And because they're so narcissistic, they want to control every little aspect of our life, which I don't understand, but for whatever reason, they do, down to what we can eat, and they will do any means necessary to get the ends always justify the means. You will hear that. They will say that in the media. You know, they'll say the ends justify the means. And for them, it does. Yeah, they don't hide it. And for all of us, we're just like, wow, that is really diabolical. And it's really hard for us to put our minds and wrap our minds around it. But once you start uncovering stuff, and that's why God called me back into podcasting for such a time as this. Like he said, I know he created me for, you know, broadcasting. I know that was what he put into me, you know, right. When he designed me and put me together in my mother's womb, because I have to share like these things that are so truthful because people are so diabolical, because we will perish if we don't know these things.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's gotten to be where, for survival, you know, people need this information. And I mean, they don't have to take my word for it. They can research it. But you have to know what to even research. And if you're not ever told these things, and I do think there's also a plan, and I think everybody probably thinks to divide us, because really most Americans, I think, really want good for other people.
Oh, I agree.
And even on both sides of the political aisle. And I was just reading a story today. There's a lady on the Democratic Party running as a pro-life person, and she's putting out pro-life ads that are very graphic about abortion. I guess she was one of the people that discovered those little babies' bodies. And she said her whole point is to let people know there is a lot of pro-life Democrats. Well, we never hear that. Mm-mm. We just hear that the whole party, everybody that's a Democrat, doesn't care about life, and because that's what the narrative that is promoted. And mm-hmm. So I think we are more alike, most of us, than we know, and we want mm-hmm. good for people. And mm-hmm. as long as they keep us divided and fighting amongst ourselves, then we cannot be a force for good. Mm-hmm. So the things you're doing and helping spread that word, I think, is what we have to keep doing.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I really do feel like that. I think American people in general are some of the most compassionate people that there are. And when we see people in Lahaina losing their house, we want to help them. Or we see the hurricane victims in Florida, we want to help them. You know, I think the American people really do have a heart. And when we were sold the narrative of Ukraine, every American got on board with the narrative of Ukraine. I mean, why? Because American people didn't want to see other people suffering across the world. Right. Unfortunately, what they're telling us isn't exactly the truth. And yeah. So you feel duped and you're like, well, now I don't want to give my money to Ukraine because it's just going back into your own pocket.
Right. So they're helping the people.
Right. They steal from us with our tax dollars. We don't get a say on how much money they take out of our money. Yeah. They take our money out of our paychecks directly. Then they go funnel it through wars and it funnels right back into their pockets.
Right.
So they basically stole our money just to enrich themselves. And it's just so sickening. And then when you find out from military intelligence officers about so much child trafficking in Ukraine, it just makes you even more sick about it. And so, like, then you just, like, oh, well, that's not exactly what I was told.
No, it's not what we were told. And it got the compassion of everybody, because you're right. We do want to help people. But then some of the people that are behind it maybe don't have those same goals. And so that's sad. So, and it's not their money. They act like it's their money, but it's not. It's the people's money.
They do act like that. So in my state, Arizona State, our legislators passed a law last session, I think, where it gave all of us parents the ability to use our own tax dollars to educate our kids however we see fit, whether that's public school, homeschooling, or private schooling.
Wow.
And the current lady who's occupying the governor seat doesn't want that to happen. She is trying everything she can do to take away what they're calling the ESA, universal ESA. What does it stand for? I don't know. Something scholarship. I can't remember the acronym. ESA is what we know it as. And she wants to take that money away from all of us parents. And I've had to say it on her tweet and everybody else. If you go on her Twitter file, like everybody, like,
not happy.
No, they're not. And they say so many things to her because she thinks it's her money. It's not. The state doesn't generate revenue. It takes from the people who make a living to fund the government. It doesn't generate any revenue on its own. This is our money, and we have been forced to pay our money to a failing school system that's not providing education to our children. And if we don't put our kids there, then all of our tax money are going to people that are not our children at all. So our kids are, we're kind of being almost double taxed because then we have to either come up with the tuition on our own with homeschooling or with a private schooling. And so this has allowed us to use our own money the way we want to educate our children.
Well, and I think in America, free market is, system is what's made us successful. Mm-hmm. So in education, we've not had it. I'm finding in healthcare, we don't have it. I'm one of the things I am trying to get out there. So if I don't know if Arizona has it or not, but they're called certificate of need laws. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. I had not heard of them either until the pandemic. But the 35 states in Washington, D.C. have these laws. And so you cannot open a hospital, doctors or anybody, unless you have this certificate of need. And so in our state, there were doctors who had the backing, had the building, had nothing to do with safety. What they do is they basically ask all the other existing hospitals, is this needed? So if they say no, then the state says, no, you can't open your hospital. So I liken it, it's in my book too, about, well, can you imagine if you wanted to open a donut shop? And the city council goes, well, we got to ask all the other donut shops if you can open your donut shop. Well, what do you think they're going to say?
No. And
And we might think, well, that's terrible. If I want to open a donut shop, this is America. Well, hospitals, you can't do that in a lot of the states because of this certificate of need. And some states, we have people in our state fighting it. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's the medical lobby or what, but it did not make any traction. So that's one of the things.
That could have been the medical lobby. You're right. They're big pharma medical. I mean, it's a big money-making operation. Yeah. And it's hard to fight. Now, there's something on your website that really intrigues me. And I want you to talk about this. What is verified? Will you comply?
And see, I wrote all these before the pandemic.
So, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I wrote Seed Police like in 2010 or something.
Wow.
So, actually, it's kind of a sequel to Seed Police. And so things were good for a little while. And then the government gets even more tyrannical and everybody has to have this implanted device. And it's a tattoo and it reads, and if you do not deny your faith, then you can't have the tattoo. So that, you know, there's the biblical stuff in there too. But so it's obviously was supposed to be set in the future, but and if you can't get food, if you don't, you can't go to the store, and it also monitors your health. And so if you're getting sick, they kind of just take you away and you don't come back. And so,
Everything you just said are things I've been trying to expose to people. And you can go back to previous shows that I've done with smart cities, transhumanism, the show Upload. I have from the horse's mouth, them saying Silicon Valley will be the next heaven because we don't need God anymore. We'll make our own heaven. We'll never die because we're going to upload our consciousness.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be able to download it to a robot of some kind if we want to. And we're going to be tracked because everything's going to go under the skin.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this is. I mean, they know where you are. They have a camera and they can hear everything you say from that. And people don't know that. But
oh, man. And your smartphones hear everything you say. Yeah. All these smart devices, they're always listening it all the time. And I've talked about that on previous shows. So anyone who's listening for the first time, I hope you'll go back to watch some of my previous episodes because I will show you from the horse's mouth, them saying it themselves. Yeah. And all this, their goal is 2030. So in less than 10 years, they want all this to happen. And look at your books, honey. All these books you're writing is for such a time as this. Yeah. You're doing what Hollywood does. You know, I mean, I don't need to share with you what Hollywood does. You know what Hollywood does. But in case you don't know what Hollywood does, or the first time listeners or people just finally realizing what we've been duped of, they pre-program us. They share this stuff that's in the plans to get us used to it so that when it comes along, we're not fighting it.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was hoping to get people thinking and to look into these things, because like I said earlier, people will go watch a film. And if you have these elements in there and they, I mean, I research, and that's why I put these things in here. It's from research. Now, obviously that one, I would probably have to update it a little bit because it's been a while since I've written that too. And things have gotten even you know, for it to be more, you know, futuristic, it's gotten more real, unfortunately. I didn't want them to become real, but they've become more real than they were when I wrote them. So I was hoping they'd be a cautionary tale and we would not go down those roads. And we haven't yet. And hopefully we won't. It's, to me, it's up to God, you know, it's.
And up to us, because God's giving us this information, right?
Right. Oh yes. We have to be his hands and feet, and we do have to proclaim what we know. I mean, like even what happened with my husband, I know people probably think I'm crazy.
No, you're not.
I might not have believed it either. I mean, I already had, I'm skeptical of a medical, some of the things that they're doing, because we did holistic and we weren't allowed to do any of that. But I've seen it and I can't unsee it. And now that I've seen it, I have to say it, because for me to be silent is just as bad as what they're doing. Because if I don't at least try to warn somebody who might listen and it happens to them, then I'm just as bad as the people that were doing it, because I didn't share about it.
And your story lines up with other people I've interviewed.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Mean, even lines up with my story with my dad. And I mean, I've seen it too. And his birthday was just a few days ago, and it's really hard. You know what I mean? Like, when your husband's birthday comes around or holidays come around, it's so hard. To think that someone cut their lives off sooner. But
that's the hard part.
That is the hard part. But I know my dad is in the happiest place ever, because he's with God, and my dad loved God more than anything else. So I rest assured that at least that's good. You know, I feel good about that. But one thing about prophecy, and I'm not like super into, I don't get into that. It's not something I know a lot about, prophecy and gifting and all that. It's not my gifting set, but when God speaks to me, I know.
Yeah.
And a long time ago, in early 2000, when I was on the radio station and I broadcasted it on the air, not really understanding what I was saying, but God just really put into my soul, we need community gardens. Going back to your seed thing, we need community gardens. And I was just like, I don't know why we need community gardens, but God's telling me we need community gardens. So we just need community gardens. And I would just preach that, so to speak, you know, like, I don't know why, but now that I've seen the attack on food, I am like, oh, God's trying to tell us that we need to protect our own food. Like, if we know what we're growing, and you can get those heritage seeds and grow really healthy food, and we can help each other as a community, this is what will bring us together, because we need to eat. There's such an attack on our food system and we still need to eat. And God was telling me we need community gardens. And I was like, oh, well, that makes sense now. It didn't in early 2000s, but it does now.
I did start a project. It's not really taken off, but I called it Orchard in the Park. And you know how we plant those Bradford pears that don't make pears? And so already maintained green spaces, if the cities or the universities would plant fruit trees, and then food pantries could even offer a certificate or something, and people could come pick their own fruit. And so it's a lot like the community gardens, maybe just a little less, hopefully, labor intensive. But yes, I totally agree with you. The victory gardens they had in the 40s, you know, that fed a lot of people during World War II, and they all had a garden in their yard, you know. So yes, that was amazing that you were seeing that already, because I agree. I think food, and I'm sure you've heard that quote, and I believe it is accurate. I've looked it up from Henry Kissinger, you know, control oil and you control nations, control food, you control the people. And so, you know, when they're attacking our food and they're making it where you can't even have real food anymore, it's something I saw. I think it was on one of the mainstream news stations. They had chicken that they were growing in vats. They'd taken cells and they were reproducing it in these vats. Well, if they make it where you can't even have your own chicken or your own beef, you can't eat anything but that, because you can't grow your own chicken cells in a vat, nor would you probably want to.
I just saw a news article about the 3D printing of steak, and I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound very good. Like, you see it on Star Trek. Oh, that's cool. It's make-believe in your mind. You think, oh, it's make-believe, right? And that's a cool make-believe thing, right?
Not really.
But when you're not thinking, a real thing. Yeah, and articles now coming out with 3D steak. I'm like, oh,
wow.
No.
Yeah.
No. Man, you are so cool, Gayla. I have had so much fun. We have so much in common. I've had so much fun talking to you. I want to thank you for this book. I can't wait to dive into this book called Glimmer. I really can't wait. It's a thriller. How do people reach you once more?
Go to Gayla Pruitt, and it's PRewitt.com. You can email me at Flood Watcher Productions, but that's also on my website, so at outlook.com. But if you go to that site, that'll pretty much put you with everything you need.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time you took to speak with me. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.